Welcome to Framingham, President Terry, we have today an astounding collection of fine pieces. Tony will let you know what's going on from this point.
First of all, I'm going to light the candle in honor of the creative flame in all of us, including those of you who are sitting in the meeting hall.
Inside your small books is the bond of union. That first page. Stand and say it again. Don't come along. We, the members of the Prairie,
wish to associate ourselves together in a religious community which affirms that we share a common humanity, that we need one another, and that our futures are inescapably bound together. Together we would expand our intellectual horizons, enrich our sensory experiences, and deepen our emotional sensitivities. We would sharpen our ethical awareness and broaden our sense of social responsibility. We would stand tall in our quest for integrity of life, yet not at others' expense. As the Prairie stretches out until it becomes one with the sky, let us reach out to touch and be one with the natural world and with one another.
My lay ministry has been called the many faces of Prairie, and that certainly includes Prairie faces, or the many faces of Madison, I'm sorry, and it certainly includes Prairie faces. Familiar Prairie faces may have some unfamiliar sides that I think are going to be revealed for you in today's Prairie Creator Services. The presenters, poets and songwriters, are Carolyn Dubois, Carolyn here, Nancy Healy, Mike Briggs, myself, Mary Mullen, Annis Pratt in absentia, David McKee, Barbara James, Medgie Butler, who played some of her pieces this morning for us, Bob Parks, Robin Parks, Christopher McKee, Diane Deruin, did I say that right? Deruin?
Deruin.
I lost the bit. And Barbara Palachuk. This is just a sample of these people's creativity. And it's also just a sampling of the creativity of Prairie people who have written poems or created music. We'll start with a poem by Carolyn Dubois about the creative process. Her poem talks about how a poet must speak in her own voice rather than meet everyone else's expectations. Carolyn will then read two other poems for you to give you a good flavor of her voice. Carolyn.
Thank you. I'm told that songs and poetry should be light, happy, and gay, should lift the heart and deepen the soul as we go on day to day. I wish I could focus on the best and somehow ignore the terrible rest. But my heart won't be still, and I'm put to the test for anxiety and frustration beat in my breast. Yes, I would like to write of pleasant things, of wild flowers and streams, and a song the bird sings. Somehow, my drum beats a different tune, one that says, "May peace come soon." Crying out in fear and anger, shackled by policies and practices, oppressed by attitudes and conventions. Human dignity of the crushed screams to be acknowledged. Ironclad rules of times forgotten, relentless laws, proclamations, and pronouncements, barriers and barricades carefully erected impede the dawn of a new day. These must be shattered by the force of freedom and purged of its punitive principles in order to allow the sun, fresh air, and the cleansing waters of true equality and democracy to emerge. Look around you. What do you see? Is it love, compassion, and humility? Is it war-torn ghettos, tortured faces, hunger, despair in too many places? Iraq, Ethiopia, Afghanistan, San Salvador, Nicaragua, and Iran, Lebanon, Angola, and Israel. Is the whole damned world just going to hell? How did it begin? Where does it end? Truces and treaties over and over again? The greed for resources and to dominate, exploitation and failure to tolerate national boundaries or a governing style. Aren't there other things that make life worthwhile? It's got to stop or either soar to the unthinkable heights of a nuclear war. Is this man's destiny to end this way? Or are we victims of government, helpless prey? What is our role? What can we do? Be subjects of government and volcanic spew? Or continue to fight for freedom and peace and ensure that the horrors of mankind cease? Thank you.
Now Nancy Healy will give you a bit of her mind next in this selection of the service we're calling Political and Personal Interests.
Hi, this is strictly personal. These are some of the reactions that I have had to this incredible university we've got going on over here. Okay, now I don't know where this comes from. I just come home and all of a sudden it's just there and I have to write and I'm a little bit insane. So basically this could be called Nancy's insanity. It's true. Okay, this is called good advice. We are such sympathetic hearts here. Rational in our evaluations of the goodness, thus worth, of our fellows, judging by measures more selfish than creation, inventing standards meaningless to eternity, living our lives in frantic recognition of whatever sensibilities we own. How many mosquitoes did you swat? How much money is it worth? That's not the right shade of green. Try yellow instead, you fool. Be brave. Quit yelling. You're too passive. Now you're overbearing. Don't ask. I'm busy. Have a drink, you lazy, you lush. Pay attention. Walking through the wonderland of life in measured steps with criteria for precipices we erect and struggle over together into the blackness. Be careful. Watch out. Have a nice day. Good luck. Okay, that was good advice. Now here's the insufferable idealist. This is the other side. There's always two sides to every person, at least. This is the insufferable idealist. I don't know if this is a poem or what it is. More of Nancy's insanity. She walked. No, it was more drifted. Into the group. Took a firm stand in the center of all their loud talking and started to speak in a quiet yet excited voice. Do you know what is the toughest in the world can take the hardest knocks, the meanest words, is the most expensive but costs no money? The wildest imagination possible somewhere in the end, middle, or beginning must be faced as the true reality.
No, said one of the sane ones, with feet planted on the ground. He was impatient and glaring at her. She had interrupted him.
Nevertheless, she continued, lust forever and take shape when you don't know it was around all the time, took years to see it, comes in the focus in a few seconds, can live in the dark and broad daylight, feeds on a lifetime of experience, which nearly starved it to death sometimes, was buried for dead and mourned for gone for years and years until it wasn't even remembered. The blueprints for which were never found came into being with no real work at all, not one ounce of blood, sweat, or tears, took no nails or lumber, and slowly became so firmly concrete that you nearly tripped over it.
Oh, cut it out, yelled another man. Get to the point, you silly girl. Do you think we of all day, snapped a woman,
rests on the firmest foundation ever devised, all feelings, stays even when you tell it to go away? She, whom they all thought was crazy by then, was talking faster and faster as though she saw something more real to her than they had ever known or ever seen in all their lives. She sounded like the funny little squirrel chattering in the treetops above them, intensely sensitive and feeding on a big juicy nut held in delicate paws that never let it drop to the ground while it turned it around. She felt like y'all, strong and light, flooding the room and refusing to sit down. What is this indestructible thing I wish you'd lose and let us forget? One man asked in a petulant voice. In spite of all your enthusiasm, we can't see it, yelled another man louder. What is it? So a woman stamped her foot. A dream, she asked.
Mike Briggs has a couple of political songs now to sing for us. Mike. Understand.
Right after high school, they married in June. He went to college while she went to work in an office for $4 an hour so she could support them while they lived in equality. Each as good as the other. He'll make his way while she makes the money. Living together in equality. He went on to grad school. She stayed on the job. He got his doctorate. She got a baby. He stayed home and cooked and made beds so she could support him while they lived in equality. Each as good as the other. He'll clean up the world while she cleans up the toilet. Living together in equality. He made full professor. She raised the kids. He went to conventions while she went out shopping. Mending his socks so she could support him while they lived in
equality.
Each as good as the other. Gets to roam while she stays at home, living together in equality. Title of that one is fairly obvious. This one I wrote about 12 years ago. I changed the words slightly. The sentiments still fit, I think. Everyone in our county receives a fair wage. The for the work that they do till they reach their old age. For racism and sexism, we've found a solution, and our lakes and our rivers are free of pollution. Schools in our county don't teach useless stuff. When the kids have been through them, they all know enough. The churches all preach that it's wrong to be greedy and devote most of their budgets to the poor and the needy. The flaws that are in us defy all detection. We surely have reached close unto perfection. So around our fair county we'll build a great wall and believe that the world isn't out there.
Poetry to each other, which incidentally was just a great experience. We're at Mary's house. It was a fun evening. We discovered that we had some common themes. They included animals, kids and parenting, work, love, and nature. Here are a few animal poems to entertain you. I did this for a contest that wanted poems that were seasonal. They didn't get published, but I like it anyway. So it's a seasonal poem about something very dear to my heart. It's called Dog at My Door. Anyone who's met my dog can thoroughly appreciate the poem. There's a dog at my door with April feet that soon will print a wild mosaic on my yellow kitchen floor. And if I don't catch her, leave a trail of new-thawed earth across my unmade bed. Oh, dog, how hard it is to love you in the spring when prissy folks with neat, fastidious cats invite me to their tidy bungalows. There's a dog at my door, a happy dog. It's frisbee time with leaps and yells and aerial displays that bring applause from neighbors two doors down. Time to show the birds who's boss and fiercely send intruding squirrels to safer turf atop the apple tree. Time to swim and execute strategic shakes that drench the unsuspecting children playing near. There's a dog at my door, tired from bounding through the leaves and burying half-eaten treasures underneath my aster bed. Tired from digging up fresh bulbs I tried to plant 2 days ago. Full from eating overripe tomatoes tossed across the garden fence. A bit ashamed at being caught lying in the neighbor's pumpkin patch. There's a dog at my door, nose all white and whining to get in, knowing that the pot of soup that smelled so good above her head is sure to have a well-soaked bone. Anxious to play tug of war as soon as I sit down from shoveling snow. Oh, pesky dog, supposedly too big to climb upon my lap. How comforting to have you in my quiet, shuttered home.
Would you believe that the platypus is a mammal, a distant cousin of us? It has a beak like a duck, but its young by nature suck. Its feet are webbed as they should be. Yet, like the reptile, it slithers the sea. Just what is it? Guess if you must. It is what it is. It's a platypus.
My poem's called Mowgli, and it's Mowgli was a boy who grew up with wolves in India that Rudyard Kipling wrote about. So this is kind of a hybrid poem. Mowgli, oh you lucky boy, naked frog of a baby with wolf mother and wolf father, lying rib to rib with wolf brothers and sisters, close as Adam and Eve before the fall, a paradise of warm white gold pouring down your parching throat, fists clutching furry mother's flanks, eyes squinched shut, the better to taste, with never a notion to fear what big ears and what big teeth grandmother had. Mowgli, you naked frog of a boy, blessed with Bagheera, the black panther, thy silky companion with ruby eyes, he who knew the ways of men, now swearing by the broken lock that freed him, bought your shining life with the pack, with the kill of a bull, pagan sacrifice, more civilized than a crucified son, God's gift to man. Blessed also with Balu, the brown bear, thy teacher, he who made you master of tree roads and jungle trails, friend to Hathi, the elephant, and Cheel, the kite, slave among snakes. Then Daddy Bear with his neat house, his chairs, his bowls, his beds, his mama and baby bear, domestic scene that Goldilocks could not even squeeze into. Mowgli, oh, you lucky Indian boy, naked frog of a wolf child, son of the free people, learning the law of the jungle, happy in your hunting grounds that held no fairy godmothers, no wicked witches, king's riches, stepmothers, stepsisters, glass slippers, princess kisses, pea-sensitive princesses, only real dangers. The red dog droles, Shere Khan the tiger, the burning drought, the poison people. Mowgli, you quick-eyed boy, arms scarred by wolf bites, legs that could run all night, feet hard enough to sharpen a knife. I'd rather be you, cast out of the pack thinking I was dying with crying, or you holding the body of the dead lone wolf, or you driving yourself out of your childhood paradise to search dull, smoky villages and their death trap huts for a human wife, than Toto's Dorothy, or Peter's Wendy, or Sleeping Beauty, or the dwarf's Snow White.
My next bit of prose sounds like it's about circuses and animals, and particularly horses. It's really about something else. It's the search for myself. It symbolizes my different selves and the search for my abilities. I call this poem Resin Baby because it lays out my qualities like a resume does. Also, it will kind of bridge our animal theme and our work theme, which comes next. Resume. Coming to town, hooray, and I get to peek in the tent. If I were in the big top, what would I do? I would swoop across the cheering crowd in aerial displays. So daring, even circus clowns would gasp at my abandon. I can't. I have a tennis elbow and a chronic case of vertigo. Lions, I would dash into the pen, cracking my long whip and looking so commanding in my shiny boots and neatly pressed jungle tan safari pants. As excited cheers diminished to an expectant hush, I would bravely thrust my head into the snarling lions. I forgot. I'm allergic to all kinds of cats. Well, dogs are out. They know I'm inconsistent and a pushover for sad eyes and long spaniel ears. Horses! Horses! My carousel is whirling around with gaily painted horses. The dappled one, the music horse, is now for leisure times and cannot be enticed into the ring. One, the rhyming horse, is too impulsive and probably would either lie and sleep or bite the cotton candy man. The yellow one, the public speaking horse, needs encouragement and exercise, but might do well inside the ring. Yes, that horse might do well. In fact, I think old Yellow is a leader, if one can find the right command to get her moving. The spotted horse has been across the sea, a useful horse that's bumbled into hostile barns and suffered nips and kicks from innocently sniffing a native horse's private sack of oats. That horse is much wiser than the newly crafted mares and stallions wearing just a single coat of paint. The aqua horse, one called Teacher, is most suited to the ring. She too has learned from her mistakes and now knows how to share. Her years of training and experience should pay off inside the canvas showplace. The steadfast mare, whose colt cavorts across the green in search of other pastures, understands the other mares whose muscles ache from pulling heavy wagons for a smattering of oats and condescending swats on their behinds. That mare, with proper grooming and instructions not to nip the hand that holds the feedback, useful. The crimson horse has yet to find the right calliope to make her dance inside the ring. Banging on the stable gate, she champs to be released. She hates the bit and wants to shed her lacquered coat, bolt across the... that's interesting. Shed her lacquered coat, bolt across the green, gallop in the wind and frolic in the rain. Perhaps with new exciting baiting, she too will fit the green. Old Blue, gentle, plodding horse, doesn't have a PhD in circus prancing, but she's seen a lot of circus folk and has a fair amount of smarts. Kind of smarts it takes to pull a wagon down the street without upsetting highfalutin circus show-offs spangled up and waving to the crowd. I like Old Blue. Old Blue and Crimson Horse somehow get along real well. I'm not sure why. The barber horse has trimmed the mane of every breed that trots across the green. She learned to chat with fussy horses, macho horses, frightened horses, even studs, all frisked up from drinking liquor from the corn that rotted in the barn. Wise horse, the barber horse, wise from being nipped and kicked for whining or snorting when she should have neighed. Perfect for the ring. These horses don't belong shackled to a tiny carousel, but the carousel keeps spinning, spinning, spinning. It's time to slow it down and let them off.
Must I always read and write? From this desk, can I take flight? Or is this chore just my flight?
Piles and piles I'd like to slight. Papers and books, pencils and pen, over and over, now and again. Researching, critiquing, adding, deleting, scratching, erasing, rewriting, replacing. Halt! I say, stop this madness. Is this scholarship? Or is it fadness? Is this what it takes? It takes to survive? How else in academia do you stay alive? The rule of the game is that you write what you know, or else from academia you will have to go.
Annis Pratt has written a poem entitled Crazy Quilt, and I'm going to read a portion of it that applies to the workplace. How
can I gird myself for the office canyons where, squeaking like bats, the men signal each other? Shall it be pantsuits, cuffs, and collars, as if I were one of them? Or curls, mascara, the paraphernalia of the others? I prefer a gentler armor, woolen skirts, and cashmere sweaters, of such soft stuff as island women weave for their loved ones and for each other.
This little poem is about, sort of about work, I guess. It was my pitch for the Nature Conservancy, clearing some land. It's really more about that work sort of rekindling my samurai romance with the axe. It's called Clearing Land in Spring Green. Each axe stroke, I disappear in the branch marrow. Pine chips fly with new March robins.
Barbara?
And Joe.
And Joe. Sorry about that.
A good mother or wife, and secondly, a poem to a son who's growing up. Medu.
Maybe I'll just mention that this is about my mother-in-law. My
ex-mother-in-law. Yes.
Career of the smother. She took from the infant, born not without pain, the right to his being, and said, "He is mine." She took from that child his young freedom and joy. He will do as I say, be a proper good boy. She took from that young man his faith in his life. She taught him to lean and to need her forever. She took from that husband his love for his wife. She taught him to sin to love any but mother. She took from their children the closeness and fun to be seen in the playing twixt father and son. She took from the warmth of all the warmth and the caring that is given as take in a marriage of sharing. She rent them apart, and she took all she could. And she said, as a mother, I do what is good. This was written to my first son at a time when he felt quite alone. I think he suffered the most from my divorce. He didn't like himself. He was very self-critical. I haven't quite gotten over that yet. This was written really for myself at that time. I wanted to share it with him, but it wasn't a time when he could really receive it. I did show it to him later. Dear son, a plea. It's almost like a prayer, I suppose. Come back to the path. Oh, I should mention, one of the things he was doing at that time in order to establish who he was and to like himself was learning to rock climb. And he pretty much taught himself. Come back to the path. Come away from the rocks. The going's so much tougher there. There's no warmth. You're alone, and I am hearing you groan as you suffer your pain and despair. You don't see as you cling to that least little hold with the dust and the sand in your eyes. There is freedom and joy like a bird on the wing, not afraid he will fall from the skies. Be that bird, satisfied just to be who he is and to let the world see him that way, with the ultimate goal of the joy in your soul that the person you are is okay. Then you'll be on the top and you'll know you did well, for the feeling will rise in your heart that you don't have to fight or to prove or to win, to be who you were at the start. For the child that you were was an unopened bud, full of being and beauty and joy, and you've let yourself grow and you've opened up tall to the man growing out of the boy.
This is a poem that Bob wrote after Ian's birth, for his dedication here. Hiccups and sneezes and things out there, what do you see, my bright-eyed boy? Two brothers to greet you, one creamy, one crunchy, both into peanut butter, and big wheels and hot wheels and cartwheels and falling down, and much, much more, too new for you to know, though know you will. The big furry with the wet tongue, the little furry with the noisy bark, the littlest furry with the tickly whiskers. A big sister who feels like mom but doesn't work. Mom who has it all and does it all. Dad who does most of the too but feels lots of beer. And once a week, a big room full of people full of talk. You are their bigger family. They are your bigger family, Ian Wesley. Something to understand, not today, but tomorrow.
I need to get David and Brandon
around us. He also has sister.
I don't know where the right place is.
That's L-O-A-D.
I have no idea what they're doing.
I already did that.
Question.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I thought I'd have it on either.
Wait for the kid.
Oh, some child pulled the phone out of the computer and they thought it was just
that. Don't you play a teacher with the camera? I don't know, maybe Mike made out
what
he
had. Here comes the expert. All right. Oh, it is.
You were four times before the service.
Anyway, this is supposed to be a program that Robin did.
Here we go. Hi.
I saw a guy named Murphy.
Yes.
Is the volume on?
We'll give it another few minutes here. Is it working?
Age 9.
You want me to introduce this?
Why don't you?
Okay. Well, it's hard to follow a computer act. This is a poem about my daughter, and it's also about sort of about a marsh. So it'll begin the series on nature. It's really about a vision of my daughter. It's called Seeing Georgina by the Marsh. Through the dawn ocean of clattering oak leaves, The blackbirds chatter through the autumn brown rushes and around a child, face glowing from within like the smoldering maples in the pre-dawn light. Her face open before the seeping in of language, yet beyond all speaking. This child, smile and hair, golden like the maples, like the flesh they are, could only be mine. This is a poem by Christopher McKee, who decided he wanted to learn about Johnny Appleseed instead of read it this morning. So it's called Nature. I love nature. I love the sun, moon, stars, sea, and the snow. Flowers smell nice. Birds look nice. Rabbits hear well. Let's go see nature. I got a bunch all in a row here. Okay. This is a poem called Saving Geese. In flight from hearing, I hear the wedges of geese flying south to Illinois, to autumn-warm nests in the fallen sumac. Past the winter moon, the geese will rise, honking the tundra awake. They can taste the nightless horizon lengthening out past all hearing. And this last one is sort of from my lay ministry period when I got to be friends with John Oliger, and we found a strong common interest in Lao Tzu. And I wrote this poem as a inscribed it in a book which I gave him at the end of the lay ministry. It's called After Lao Tzu. Live like water in the spring. Fall in single drops. Leave no trace on the crocus.
My poem is entitled Jim's Bog, and a bog is a special kind of plant community that's relatively rare in southern Wisconsin, but there are a few really nice ones. And one of them, which is the subject of this poem, is located in Jefferson County, just across the Dane County line, in Red Cedar Lake. And the gem of Jim's Bog is Jim Zimmerman, who first introduced me to this bog. I remember the day Kate fell through the mat. It was May, warm and sunny, and we laughed nervously as we pulled it back up on the undulating sphagnum sponge, happy the canoes were close. There were tamaracks with soft, new needles, and the pitcher plants, the liquid in their rose-shaped leaves, enclosing whole miniature communities. The bog beans, starry blooms, and the glistening sunbeams were alive in this mystical, green, floating world. Today, it is cold, December. The only greens are the mosses, polytrichum, dark and rich, like masses of tiny spruce trees. Luke O'Brien, chartreuse cushions, outrageous. And sphagnum itself, still violently bright, nestled among the lake ice crystals. Should I test the mat today, see what wonders remain of last summer's exuberance? It was warm yesterday. The ice is thin. Too thin to traverse the moat. Looking back from the high ground in the oaks, I think, as O'Keefe says of her desert mesa, isn't it fine?
This short poem is a place that I think probably every one of you know. Dark spot over Curtis Prairie. Look twice to see it move. A cloud shadow. Wind in my hair. Sweet smell of death. Crow, feathers spread, soaring low overhead. Arboretum. And then this next longer poem introduces the section of this service we're calling our mystical section. And it's called "He Touches Me Gently With His Silence." It's not written about an experience of mine, but I was in a poetry class and we were asked to choose a partner, and then we each told each other a story from our childhood, and this was my partner's story. Everything is a path, an opening, a clearing. And yes, I am really here in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, where moist dawn wafts through the a window, where quiet hangs like a veil over the valley, where stairs creak three times under my father's step, and where my heart leaps to the morning. Everything is a path, an opening, a clearing. We are going through the screen door together, careful not to let it bang. The town is still dark, a maze of coal tunnels twisting between house roofs flung every which way. We wind our way through black alleys. Uphill, I am dancing on a brown mattress of needles. They crackle like toothpicks under his feet. They bend noiseless under my own. This is my home of many pillars, complete with feathery canopy, with furry chitterings of squirrels, with tender clicking of pine flakes sifting through the branches, with dust motes drifting through angles of sunlight. Sunlight that forms paths I could walk up to heaven on and slide down easy and fast as on piles of tailings. This is my house of clean carpets where layers of fog hover and hover, cutting tree trunks in half, where I see deer heads floating free as balloons and hoofs dancing beneath them, disembodied, enchanted, the fairy deer of my dreams. Where sharp pine odor flares my nostrils, wide as a horse's, a multitude of green rushes into my lungs, unspeakable calm and joy flood my body with light, and I am released from my girl's body, taken out of my family prison, set free in my own state, where my father touches me gently with his silence, and everything is a path, an opening, a clearing.
I have a poem entitled "The Power of Dreams." I who plan lifetimes and drive in snow and can relate to buildings, I would like to know the power of dreams. How dare I go so far away from my blue bed and my glowing head to come back roughly, thinking it's 10 o'clock the next real morning.
This poem is one that I realized I'd read here once before at one of our men's services on parenting. But it's really a religious poem. It's called "Thanksgiving in the Snow." Seeing a child making angels in the snow marks this holiday that might any day be finally coming. And the tastes of food and friends, words are always coming around the table, around each minute clinging in the mind, like the snow that fills the sleeping angels, coming to lay us down all together, embracing together within the wings of snow, forever holy. And this is a piece which I wrote after my first and as yet only experience of the Madison Farmers Market. And actually we'll have another one by the same title after this, which is purely a case of simultaneous discovery. It's called "Epiphany at the Farmer's Market." You know this scene, as if made by some Hollywood Bruegel. All the rings of the circus are one promenade of suburban dentists in chinos and penny loafers, puzzled by the whole wheat pastry. Of young women in wire rims and sandals, as if from another age now, their hair reaching down nearly to their fine downy legs. Of loony old men come over from the Y, listening to the voices in the potted begonias. Of fathers calling for their children dancing among the rhubarb muffins. We all seem to be watching or being watched, all except the two old svenskas settled quietly on the grass. Their silver hair lights the square. They dream together of white dresses and deck chairs on the Stockholm strand. Their golden hair lights the harbor. They size up the sturdy young fishermen and dream of the fine farmers they will wed in America. At the corner by the Walgreens, a hammered dulcimer plays, sleepers awake. Each note ascends to heaven.
And this is Annis Pratt's Epiphany at the Farmer's Market. I saw something lovely at the farmer's market, cool after long drought. Hog sausage, cooking on somebody's camp stove, and everyone in sweaters for the first time all summer. The sun penetrating heavy shade trees, just enough to light up translucent jars of apple jelly, the peas in their pods, and the gleaming honey. What I saw that was lovely, among the cucumbers, sweet corn, zucchini, and pickling peppers, over by the table where the same old lady sells every market day her herbs and herb jellies, was two women, one whom I have known to be tense and acerbic, before she came to know the other, who is lithe and dark and whose smile knocks you over. They were walking slowly through the farmer's market in all that cornucopia of dahlias and apples, one with a knapsack, the other with a basket, holding hands, becoming lovers.
I'm not very well practiced before a crowd.
How will I know until you tell me? Won't you come, won't you walk, won't you sing with me? Won't you come, won't you talk, won't you sing with me? Yes, I know those qualms, I felt that apprehension. Yes, I know the dread and anguish of rejection. Lift up your head, let me hear your words. Watch our spirits soar like the birds. Say you love me and much do you care. Say do you love me and much can we share. Don't be afraid to let me know it. Don't be afraid to tell and show me. Watch what fancies form your freedom. Don't be afraid to let me know it. Don't be afraid to tell and show me. Won't you talk, won't you touch, won't you hold me close? May I talk, may I touch, may I hold you close? Yes, I feel our fear, it needn't last forever. Yes, I sense the pain, it all remains withheld. Give me your hand, let me touch your face. I'll be your hand to place. Say, do you love me? How much do you care? Say, do you love me? How much can we share? Don't be afraid to let me know it. Don't be afraid to show and tell me.
Did Mary tell you that is her composition?
Too scared to play it on the guitar.
Two waltzes. First one was a wedding gift to two friends of ours, Allison and Reed, married last year. Called Play of Prude. From his poem, which is about 300 years old, come live with me and be my love, and we will all pledge it through.